Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. It's a brand new week here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson as we get this brand new week off and rolling. And Travis, I was a big weekend for sports on the local front. And in the national, we're going to start with this. We're going to talk Major League Baseball for a moment. Yu Darvish is off the market. This was a big deal on Saturday. The news broke that Yu Darvish had signed a contract with the Chicago Cubs. They gave him $126 million over 6 years. Your initial reaction?
I'm not high on Yu Darvish as I once was. I think in the postseason, especially in the World Series, I kind of showed a bunch of his flaws. But for the Cubs, they needed pitching, so they basically replaced Yu Darvish. Jake Arrieta is out, so Yu Darvish is in, and I would rather have Jake Arrieta, to be honest with you.
Well, apparently, according to reports, Arrieta turned down a lot of money to return to Chicago.
Yeah, maybe he just feels like he wants to move on from Chicago. Yeah. I know that there was discussions and rumblings that the Dodgers were interested and he wanted to be a Dodger, so maybe he's waiting for a Dodger deal.
It's possible. I think the dominoes are going to start falling now that Darvish has a contract. This is my take on the Yu Darvish deal. Now, everybody was flipping out talking about that they overpaid. Did they overpay for Darvish? I think right now we're setting up for another Dodger Cubs NLCS. It'd be the third straight year, right? I think we can agree on that.
Yes.
They're the two best teams in the National League. At least that's what it appears to be. They are paying Yu Darvish for 6 years for 1 year of his peak. I think Darvish is in his peak right now. I think this is the best Yu Darvish that you're going to find. He's not going to get any better from this point on in his career.
No.
Can he help the Cubs win a World Series this year? Yeah, I think he can. I think he can. I think there are other holes on that team. But here's the thing about baseball. You don't have a hard salary cap. You have a luxury tax. Okay?
Two different things.
They're two completely different things. If your team is willing to pay the luxury tax, who cares? Sign them. I mean, look, as a fan, the Cubs, it took the Cubs, what, 108 years to win a World Series, right?
Yes.
Isn't that what it was, 108 years?
Yep.
Would you trade a five-year bad contract for one World Series championship?
Absolutely.
You're a Reds fan. The Reds stink. They're horrible. Would you pay Yu Darvish an additional 5 years if he could help you win a World Series right now?
Yes, and this is the thing that if we're talking about like teams like the Reds and that they want to sign big name free agents and stuff, but they don't want to trade assets to fill those voids. So yeah, I would trade 1 year of a World Series championship and have 10, 15 more year bad years. Absolutely.
And I think that's exactly what's happening here in Chicago. Baseball fans, look, you shouldn't care about the money. You really should not care on what your team is paying a player.
No.
Now, in the NBA, it's completely different because a bad contract in the NBA can hamper you for years. A la Luol Deng, Timothy Mozgov. I want you to look at Memphis, what's going on right now with Mike Conley. We talked about this horrible contract. A bad contract in the NBA is completely different than a bad contract in Major League Baseball. You had a bad contract. Look at a bad contract. Adrian Gonzalez was a bad contract, right? Matt Kemp is a bad contract right now. You can trade these guys and at the same time pay a portion of that salary and you're done with them. That's it.
Yeah.
That's not the case in the NBA. The NFL, I don't care that a guy signs a $130 million contract. You have to look at the guaranteed money. And I think that's something to keep in perspective. Baseball, a bad contract does not hamper your ability if ownership is willing to spend. If I'm a Cubs fan, I'm happy with Yu Darvish. Would I have preferred Jake Arrieta? Maybe. You know, again, Arrieta kind of resurrected his career in Chicago. Won the, 2015 Cy Young, if I'm not mistaken. It was 2015 off the top of my head. I'm trying to remember back. yeah, I probably have a little bit of loyalty to Jake Arrieta. Look, that train is gone. There's no way Arrieta goes back to Chicago now. I don't know where he goes. Maybe he sticks in the National League.
Milwaukee.
He goes to St. Louis. Milwaukee is a possibility. You said L.A. You think L.A. is actually a possibility?
I think it's the Dodgers, the Brewers. I think those two teams are probably the two most logical places for Jake Arrieta.
And I also got to throw this out there. I know that Darvish was terrible in the World Series. L.A. probably doesn't get there if not for Darvish. He was phenomenal in the series against Arizona. He was phenomenal in the series against Chicago. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball.
I think he was tired. I think he wore out.
I think he was tired. I think there's a lot of variables that went into the fact that, well, first off, the Astros had seen Yu Darvish before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Diamondbacks didn't have a lot of experience with Darvish. The Cubs didn't have a lot of experience with Darvish. The Astros had played against Darvish. You look at plate appearances, they knew how to play Darvish. On top of that, he relies heavily on a slider. You go back to the way the balls were wound and the stamp on the ball. It was hard for a lot of pitchers to get a grip, and this guy's relying on a slider. I get it. There's a lot of variables that go into Darvish's struggles in the World Series. I'm not willing to say that Yu Darvish is done. Now, we could be wrong. Look, maybe that was the beginning of the end of Yu Darvish. I mean, maybe we look back on this and say, I don't know, June or July, and we say, wow, Darvish, it's gone. He's finished. I don't think so. A lot of money, not your money, not going to hamper the Cubs moving forward. By all means, spend away, Theo. Go right ahead and do it.
Yeah, and the Cubs have that window now where they're in the win-now mode because you don't know how much longer you're going to have that window where you're going to have the Bryant and the Rizzo and all that young talent where that window's going to, it's eventually going to shut. And so you're in a win-now, so you go out, you get Yu Darvish, you hope it pays off, and you can get another championship 2 and 3 years.
Yeah, and you mentioned those guys, and it's all about being cost-effective. Those are very reasonable contracts.
Yes.
Okay, and at some point in time, they're no longer going to be very, very reasonable contracts. You're going to have to break the bank to sign a lot of these guys. You might as well use that time frame to go all in and try to make it as appealing as possible for these guys when they hit free agency. I have absolutely no problem with this signing. Dodger fans were driving me crazy over the Yu Darvish deal. For some reason, they didn't want Darvish back. And again, I refuse to believe that the World Series is the beginning of the end. Maybe it is. I just don't think so. And I think someone as smart as Theo Epstein giving Yu Darvish $126 million, I think it was two very poor games on the biggest stage in baseball. That's the way I view Yu Darvish.
Yeah, and the Dodgers, they're still the favorites to me to come out of the NL. And
I agree with that.
They need to add another starting pitcher, though. If they add another starting pitcher, they're fine. So that's why I think that Jake Arrieta makes the most sense.
Now, there are some other pitchers out there outside of Arrieta. At some point, Archer is no longer going to be in Tampa Bay, right? At some point.
The Twins right now, there's rumblings. The Twins have made an offer. This is a guy that I want the Cincinnati Reds to go out and get is Chris Archer. I love him. You have control over him for the next 3-4 years. It just makes sense. And then, like you said, Dodger fans drive you nuts. It's the same thing with Cincinnati Reds. Well, we don't want to trade Hunter Green or Nick Swinsel.
You have to.
Well, you have to trade these assets to bring in this guy because when are you going to make a trade to bring in a starting pitcher of his caliber and then hang on to this young talent? It makes no sense.
Very rarely in sports do you get someone without trading anything. Very rarely does that happen. I mean, we could go back and look at some of the occurrences. I know if you're listening right now, you're saying, well, what about this particular deal? What about that particular deal? I know that you never get full value for a superstar when you trade, but at the same time in baseball, you have to give up prospects. You have to at some particular time. Outside of the St. Louis Cardinals, can you name me another franchise that has had success over the past 2+ decades with their farm system without giving up prospects? Name me another team in baseball.
I don't think I could.
The Cardinals, that's it.
The Cardinals are it, yeah. And see, you have, like the Yankees are like, oh, we'll trade our prospects and bring in big names. That's what you have to do. You
I
can't
agree.
Just hold on to these prospects hoping for the best. Like, whoa, our franchise is set up for 5 years. Like, stop.
Well, and prospects in baseball, and we're getting way off topic here, but prospects in baseball are very eerily similar to what we get on National Signing Day.
Yeah,
it's unknown.
You don't know what you're getting.
You don't. I mean, maybe you have a rough idea, but at the same time, this is why I'm not a huge sabermetrics guy. There are variables in sabermetrics that are not applicable to in-game experience.
I would trade Hunter Green right now for Chris Archer if I had the chance. If I was the GM of the Reds, I would trade Hunter Green in a heartbeat.
Don't know what you're going to get with it. I know what you're going to get out of Chris Archer.
Yeah, I'm going to get 10 to 11 wins and 10 strikeouts per game, and I know that he's going to come day in and day out.
10 to 11 wins on a bad Cincinnati Red team. That's what you're going to
do. Yeah.
I agree with you. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA. Short slate tonight. We have six games as we start gearing up for the NBA All-Star break. We get the Pelicans at the Pistons at 5 o'clock. The Knicks will take on the Sixers, and the Clippers are on the road to meet the Brooklyn Nets. 6 p.m. tonight, we get Orlando at Chicago. 7 o'clock on KOAL. The Spurs will take on the Utah Jazz. The Jazz just keep winning. 9 consecutive games. You still don't think they're going to go to the playoffs?
I don't.
You still don't think the Jazz are going to the postseason?
I think the teams above them are still going to make the playoffs over them.
Pelicans are not going to the playoffs. Not without Boogie. They're not getting in.
I will still take the teams above them. I'm not buying into the Jazz. I know they're the hottest team in the league right now, but I still don't think they make the playoffs.
Do they win tonight?
Yes.
You get to 10 wins. You're going into the... You get to 10 consecutive
How many games
wins?
Out are they in the playoffs right now?
A game and a half.
No. Still saying no. And I know it's going to make a lot of Jazz fans mad, but I'm saying no.
They're a game and a half back of the Pelicans, who have played 500 basketball over the last 10 games. The Clippers, without Blake Griffin, maybe they sneak in, but that's all depending on how Denver finishes. Beyond that, we got to take a look. The Jazz are 4 games back right now, 4.5 games back of the Oklahoma City Thunder for the 5 seed. They're going to get into the playoffs.
They probably have the Rookie of the Year in Donovan Mitchell.
Yes.
I will give him Rookie of the Year. I think he's outplayed them all, even Ben Simmons. I will say no, though. I'm still saying the Jazz don't make the playoffs. Because I've seen the Jazz falter late March, early April, where this team stinks down the stretch.
They have Quinn Snyder now.
Yes, but they still...
But they have Quinn Snyder, who's the best coach that they have had since Jerry Sloan.
They're not making the playoffs. This team will stink in March and April, and they will falter.
I think they get in.
Mark it now.
I think they get in. Tonight, San Antonio at Utah. 8:30, it's Phoenix at Golden State. We've got a break for just a moment. Today, we are going to talk a lot of local sports as well. Next segment, we're going to be joined by Coach Ted Bianco with the Carbon Lady Dinos. Carbon will be the number 2 seed coming out of Region 14 going into the state tournament this weekend. There's a chance they could meet up with the Emory Lady Spartans. We'll talk to Coach Bianco about that and more when we return. It's a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we're back after this. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And the boys' high school basketball regular season came to an end on Friday, and the Emory Spartans traveled on the road to meet the San Juan Broncos. And for Emory, they came out on the short end of the stick. Entering the fourth and final quarter with a 9-point lead, Emory was outscored 20-9 by San Juan in the final 8 minutes. The loss dipped Emory to 5-7 in conference play, which put them in a tie with San Juan for fourth place. In the setback, Brax Jensen led the way with 16 points for Emory, while Easton Gordon and Kyson Stilson both chipped in with 12. Following the contest, a coin flip tiebreaker was administered, and Emory won the flip, meaning that they will enter the state tournament as the number 4 seed. Now, the opening round of the tournament will take place this Saturday, and Emory will go toe-to-toe with South Summit, the number 3 seed from Region 13. Now, the Carbon Dino boys basketball team also wrapped up the regular season on Friday, and they suffered a loss to American Leadership Academy at home by a final score of 51-46. The Dinos got off to a fast start, but they were outscored 16-10 in the third quarter and 14-13 in the fourth as ALA wrapped up the victory. Now, the Dinos will enter the state championship tournament as the number 5 seed from Region 14. That'll put them up against the Grand Red Devils in the opening round. That contest will also be this Saturday. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will talk more about the boys' high school basketball scene in the coming days. The high school wrestling season came to an end over the weekend as both Carbon and Emory participated at the state championship tournament at Utah Valley University in Orem. Entering the state tournament, Emory had 15 wrestlers qualify for the state finale, while Carbon had 16. Gus Dalton was the top finisher for Emory. He finished second place in his weight division, while Corby Christiansen and Newt Ovison both took third place. Dwayne Farley and McKay Macarello finished in fifth, and Drake Hoffman ended in sixth at the 285-pound weight class. Tomorrow, during the sports news segment, we will take a deeper look at all of the placers for both Carbon and Emory. No state champions came out of the Castle Country this year, but several individuals played key roles in what was a successful wrestling season. We step away from high school athletics and we take a look at the junior college basketball ranks, where both the USU Eastern men and women squads were in action this past Saturday as they traveled on the road to Twin Falls, Idaho. And unfortunately for the men, they suffered a season series sweep, dropping their third contest to CSI by a final score of 105-89. In the setback, the USU Eastern men were led by Rafael Montero. He scored 20 points. Nima Namdar chipped in with 19. And Chris Tatouris finished with 13. USU Eastern trailed by 14 at the end of the first half and played to a near tie with CSI in the second half, 54-52. Now, USU Eastern will take the next couple of days off before returning to the court. Their next contest will be Saturday on the road against the Salt Lake Community College Bruins. Now, the USU Eastern women's basketball team also suffered a setback on Saturday. They dropped to CSI by a final score of 76-72. CSI takes the season series 2-1. In the setback for the women, they were led by Alyssa Crumley, who poured in 21 points. Caitlin Tuliono scored 16 points and also handled 8 rebounds. Rochelle Blazard finished with 13, and Brooklyn Barris scored 10. The women will follow suit with the men, and their next contest will take place this Saturday again against Salt Lake Community College. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. It's also there you will find archived interviews with coaches in the local area. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Hello, sports fans.
Time for sports.
Let the games begin.
Turn on the radio.
It's time to talk high school basketball on the Coach's Corner.
Such a busy week on the local sports front. So much happening over the next little while. The wrestling and swimming season's now complete. We're gearing up for what could be the final weekend for teams in the high school basketball 3A classification. If you don't win Friday or Saturday, your season is over. We have the girls on Friday and the guys on Saturday. And that's what we're going to focus this particular segment on. The Carbon Lady Dinos earned a victory on Thursday. Now, that win forced a three-way tie in Region 14. A coin flip determined the seeding between Union, Carbon, and Juab. Carbon actually finished second in the coin flip tiebreak. And so they will take on Summit Academy. That'll be Friday night at 8:10 p.m. at Wasatch High School in Heber. Carbon could potentially meet up with the Emory Lady Spartans in the second round. Emory lost their coin flip tie break, so now they are the 2 seed from Region 15. They take on Providence Hall. Again, that'll be Friday night at 6:30 p.m. A win for Emory and a win for Carbon. And to open up the quarterfinals at Dixie State on February 22nd, it could be Emory and Carbon. But you have to focus on the first round matchup at hand. Joining us right now to talk about the end of the season and what lies ahead for this team, we have Carbon Lady Dino basketball coach and athletic director Ted Bianco over the phone right now. Coach, a pleasure. Thank you.
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Coach. I know it's go time for you guys now as we gear up for the state tournament. This is what we play all year for.
It's the best time of the year, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you guys had a very interesting region, Coach, and we got to talk about that. A three-way tie at the top of the standings. You don't see that too often. We're used to seeing ties, but three-way ties, I mean, I think it speaks to the parity in Region 14.
Well, the three top teams in our region were fairly closely matched. You know, we all won against each other on our home courts, and we all lost against each other on their home courts. So it was a fun year in Region 14 for us, for sure, and we learned a lot about ourselves, and I felt like we got better as the season went on. So we're excited to see what the tournament brings us.
Yeah, you and I were talking a couple of weeks ago about that progression and how you guys continue to improve throughout the entire year. Going into the region season, Coach, the goal, I know, was always a region championship. How realistic was that, did you feel, for this team going into the year?
I felt like, looking at where we were at, you know, with a brand new team and so many young kids, that, you know, we'd had success against Juab and Union in the past, but I felt like, you know, second place would probably be where we would end up. But as the season went on and we continued to improve and we continued to play the way we did, those feelings changed. I knew that this particular group, if they wanted to, they could win a region championship, and they did that. You know, unfortunately, a coin flip put us as a second seed, but we're happy to be there, and we'll play who we have to face. First up is Summit Academy, and if we don't get past that, then our season's over, and that's not what we want to have happen.
What aspect of the game did you guys improve most on to allow you to tie with Union and Juab, Coach?
I felt like after the Union game, we kind of, at Union, we didn't play well, but we gave ourselves a chance to win. I thought that game probably woke us up the most. it gave our kids a chance to see where they were really at and how good they could possibly be. So that game was a real wake-up call for us. And then after that, I thought we started playing better. And it was that little jolt that got us going. So I was really pleased with that.
This region is very top heavy. You got Delta in the middle, and I think Delta is an okay squad, but the bottom half, you got ALA, Providence, Hall, Mesa, Prep. Is it difficult for a young team to continue to improve when you're winning games 73-15?
It's tough because, you know, your starters don't get to play a lot, and you're not getting pushed. You're not getting challenged as much as you probably should be. So that's the hard part with that. Of course, we want to win every game we can, but the hard part when you're winning games like that is your team is just not getting. I don't know that you get better playing against a team like that. Your young kids get an opportunity to play, but your main core group, they're riding the pine for a lot longer than what they probably should be.
Now, I was with the Emory boys squad on Friday. I got to witness a coin flip, or we got to talk right after a coin flip happened. When you have a three-way tie, how's that coin flip administered?
So what we did is we had a conference call, and all three schools flipped. The odd man out got first. So GUAB had heads, and I think us and Union had tails, so GUAB got first seed, and then we flipped again, and Union called it, and they called heads, and it was tails, and we got the second seed. So there was two coin flips.
You guys get the number two seed, coach, and I know it's always unfortunate that a coin flip determines something, but at the same time, Summit Academy's a squad that was 2-6, didn't necessarily play great basketball throughout the year. I believe overall their plus minus differential was even. What do you know about Summit Academy?
They have a couple big girls. They have one girl that's averaging about 13 a game. They have a couple of athletic players on their team. They're not real fast. It's a team, if we come out and play well against and put pressure on the ball, we should be able to beat them. It's just anything can happen in the tournament. So we're going to prepare for them just like they're the number one team in the state and get ready to go. So our girls are going to have to come prepared. Like I said, anything can happen, and that's the thing that that scares you the most as a coach. You just never know how you're going to play. So hopefully we step up to the plate and go out and do our job.
I know in years past, 3A had that play-in game the higher seed would host. That definitely gives you a decisive advantage. Do you prefer that to the neutral site?
I like it better because it makes more sense. You don't have to gather 16 teams for a day-long basketball tournament and then have to provide all the help and everything that's needed for that. It's just easier to host at the home sites and move on. I guess if they want 16 teams to go to the tournament, they should probably decide that they want it to be the first round to be the true state tournament, and let's all go meet at the state tournament site and play basketball. This first round game being at a neutral site, in my opinion, is probably wasn't the best idea, but we were outvoted. All the 3A schools were outvoted. I think Emory was the only 2A school that voted to have the home site situation like 3A has normally had. So it is what it is, and we'll go play. It'll be a fun atmosphere for us, and we have the late game. We play at 8:10 on Friday. So if you don't have anything else better to do, come up and watch the Lady Dinos take on Summit Academy. I believe our game is right after the Emory game.
Yeah, definitely is. Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Ted Bianco with the Carbon Lady Dino basketball squad. Coach, I was talking to some other media members over the weekend, and they said, you know, the bottom half of the bracket, it's more favorable because you only have one number one seed. And I said, that's insane to say that because Emory comes in at the number two. That's a legitimate number one team. They lost a coin flip to Richfield. And then you have Carbon, who's the number two seed. They were tied for first place. And you have Union, who is the number three seed, and they tied for first place. I see four number one seeds in the bottom half of this bracket.
I agree with you. I mean, last year we lost a coin flip to Richfield, and we went and played Desert Hills, and they were, you know, a number one seed, but so were we. And so it just, you know what, just because you don't get the number one seed doesn't mean you're number one team. We won our region. We shared a portion of it just like Emory did and just like Morgan and Grantsville did in their region. So you're right. There's four number one seeds in the bottom half, and then there's two number one seeds in the top half with Richfield and Morgan, because Morgan was the number one seed. They tied with Grantsville.
Yeah, I definitely believe the bottom of the half is a little bit more difficult, but...
Oh, absolutely, it is. It's a tough half, but you know what? If you want to win it, you've got to beat the best teams, and that's the approach we're going to take, is, you know what, if you want to survive in advance, you have to beat everybody you play. It doesn't matter. And if our girls step on the floor with any doubt in their minds against whoever they play, we're going to struggle. And this group has done a good job of putting those doubts behind them and stepping on and just stepping up and playing the game, and that's what we need to do.
I know Carbon and Emory have not played in a while, and we have an opportunity to see that in the second round. With it being Carbon and Emory, is it difficult to keep the girls focused on the first round game and not look ahead to, hey, you may get Emory in the second round just based on the history between the two programs?
I think if we're looking ahead, we're going to have problems Friday night. So our job as coaches is to not let them do that. You know, we got to focus on the task at hand, and we can't worry about who's ahead of us. And so, you know, these next four practices, we'll be thinking about Summit Academy and what we have to do to beat them in advance. And then next week, we'll worry about who's up next.
Does the rotation change at all, Coach, as you gear up for the state tournament now? I know that first round game, I mean, it all kind of depends on how things go, but on a base rotation, do you tighten things up a bit or do you keep it the same?
I think what's probably going to happen is we'll keep our core girls on the floor as long as we can, unless we get in foul trouble. You know, or if somebody's not playing well, then we'll have to go to our bench. The kids coming off the bench, they're going to have to make the most of their minutes, and if they do, they'll stay in the game. It's not going to, I mean, obviously it's going to change if we were playing, you know, some of the other teams in our region. But, you know, this is state tournament time. Well, your job is to survive in advance. And so our rotations, you know, it'll all depend on the situations. But I look for some kids to their minutes to be extended a little bit, hopefully.
Yeah, it has been a while since we've only played one game in a week, right? I mean, you have to go back a little ways for the last time that happened.
Yep, you're right. Absolutely.
And it's all...
that goes back to when we had a bye about 3 weeks ago, which was nice.
Mm-hmm. Do the kids become a creature of habit and playing two games a week? Do you notice that as a coach?
I think they look forward to sometimes having that bye in the middle of the season because it does become a grind. It helps you get your legs back a little bit. And so we had two games last week. We got one game this week. We'll go hard for a couple days this week and get ready for Summit Academy. And then, you know, obviously we'll have to get ready for our next opponent starting next Monday, should we survive in advance.
I haven't talked to you, Coach, since his senior night, so I wouldn't mind hitting him with this. We got to give Kelsey Sorensen a little bit of a mention, because on senior night she was recognized, and obviously it was a great way to go out because you guys dominated at home.
Oh, it was for her. I was so happy for her, and she's had a great career for us, and she's definitely going to be an athlete that's going to be missed at this school in many more ways than just sports. She's a great kid. I've been blessed to have her on our team for the last 4 years and to be her coach. And, you know, we're going to definitely miss her, but she's going to go on and do great things in her life. And she's a tough kid. She works really hard, and she's bound and determined to have success no matter what she do. So we're extremely proud of her, and we look forward to seeing what the future holds.
Coach, I always look forward to our conversations. Hopefully we're talking next week about making the trip down to St. George. Best of luck on Friday, and hopefully we'll talk again next week.
Hey, thanks so much, Jordan. Appreciate it.
That's Coach Ted Bianco with the Carbon Lady Dino basketball squad breaking down what should be a very fun week of basketball, to say the least. We'll talk more high school basketball tomorrow. Coach Lynn Tuttle of the Emory Lady Spartans is scheduled to join us. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports straight ahead when we return here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. We're going to talk Utah Jazz basketball. The Jazz win their ninth consecutive game last night. Won nine straight games. And I know at the beginning of the show you said they're still not making the postseason. I strongly disagree. They destroyed Portland last night, 115-96. First game with Jay Crowder. He said he felt great. Felt like he was himself once again. In a roundabout way, and I have the quote right in front of me, basically said the situation in Cleveland was toxic. That's what I took from what he said last night. Look, it appeared to be. It appeared that nobody in Cleveland was having fun. Crowder comes over for Rodney Hood. They get rid of Joe Johnson as well. I don't think Joe Johnson was happy in Utah. All in all, I think it's a win for everyone. Last night, Donovan Mitchell was fantastic in this contest. You look at what Crowder was able to produce, 5 of 11, 15 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, had a block in the game. I love what he brings to the team defensively. I think it's a match made in heaven. He's always seemed like a Utah Jazz type player. Just a vibe around him. Like, you know, you can tell a player that fits a culture. Jay Crowder fits this culture in Utah.
He does.
He's right. A small market guy. He's blue collar. He's going to do the dirty work. Two teams come to mind when I think of Jay Crowder: Memphis and Utah. I think it's a match made in heaven for either of those two franchises. The Jazz are playing much better basketball. Tonight they get the San Antonio Spurs. But looking at this team and the way things have improved, what has impressed you most during this 9-game winning streak?
I think it's the way they move the ball. It's the way that they get down, and then they'll go on a 9-10-0 run, and they just put teams away. They're not letting teams back in the game. They're putting them away once they get that lead. They're putting their foot on their throat. And Donovan Mitchell is turning into a superstar in this league. He's a guy that when you need a big basket, he's going to get that basket for you. Joe Ingles, who I laughed at that contract.
He's played great.
Yeah, he's played very well. He's knocking down the three-point ball. That's what they need from him. And you're right about Jay Crowder. He brings a toughness to this team that this team needed.
A different type of toughness than Rodney Hood could provide, absolutely. You know, we could sit here and we could talk about all different kinds of aspects about the Jazz. Derek Favors, who was staying put once again. It's another trade deadline gone that I anticipated he would be gone. I thought that maybe if Utah's going to move on from anyone, it would be Derek Favors.
Mm-hmm.
He stays put. Favors last night goes 7-13, scores 15 points, had 11 boards. The Jazz were plus 23 when he was on the court. They were plus 28 with Royce O'Neal on the court last night, who got the start from the small forward spot. You mentioned Joe Ingles. Of course, Rudy Gobert. This guy adjusts every single shot inside the paint. Had a couple of blocks last night. David Locke was talking about that here on KOL last night. Is there another big in the league that that alters? It's not necessarily just a block, because you don't have to block every shot, but alters every single shot in the paint like Rudy Gobert, or is he the best in the league at that right now?
Yeah, you throw Joel Embiid in that mix, but yeah, those two are pretty good at it. I think those are the two best.
Better than DeAndre Jordan, no doubt.
Yes.
No question. And DeAndre Jordan was All-Pro last year. But the Jazz are playing great basketball, and again, you can look at several different instances that has improved on this team. For me, it's one simple statistic. They are now winning on the road. And that's what's kept them out of the top eight throughout the majority of the season. They could not win on the road. Remember at one point in time, I think they were 3-15 on the road, were they not?
Yeah, 3-15.
Is that what they were 3-15?
Because they were, them and like Atlanta had the worst road records.
Okay, the Jazz are now 12-19 on the road. So you see the difference there? I mean, that's what it is. They're above 500, heavily above 500 at 16-9 at home. Okay, and when you look at the best winning home percentages in the NBA for teams not in the playoffs, the next closest would be Detroit at 18-11. The Jazz are the only team in the NBA without double-digit losses at home that are not in the playoffs right now. It was really that simple. They couldn't win on the road, and they were losing games on the road to teams that they should have beat.
Yeah.
And I thought, once they figure that out, this team gets into the postseason. Now, again, Ricky Rubio's another guy that we didn't mention. Ricky Rubio's offense has been phenomenal during the 9-game stretch. I mean, he's scoring the basketball. He is reminiscent of Ricky Rubio post-All-Star break last year in Minnesota. The guy that I thought would work perfect with Rodney Hood. Remember, he shot 53% from the field post-All-Star break last year. I mean, that's the Ricky Rubio that I thought the Jazz had acquired in the offseason. I thought that Rubio had finally broken through a barrier. I thought he was healthy, and then he struggled in the early portion of this season. He's playing better than he has played all season long. But again, they're winning on the road. I think it's that simple with the Jazz.
Yeah, that's what they did. They flipped the switch and learned how to win on the road, and they closed teams out and won games on the road they should, beating like the New Orleanses and the Denvers and the Portlands, teams that they obviously should beat on the road, and that's what they've done. And then they go on the road and beat Toronto and Boston. So they got some good road wins. So now you're at home. You got to take care of business at home, which they do.
Now, again, the All-Star break, it's insane to me because everyone calls it like the midway point. It's not
the
midway point.
It's like 60 games, and we come back. There's like 6 weeks left in the season.
Right, right. You get 22 games after that. So you can really start looking at a playoff picture right now, and you get a realistic standpoint of where the Jazz are sitting. At 28-28, they're at 500 right now. They're one game back of the Clippers. Clippers have 28 wins, but only 26 losses. So the Jazz have played two more games. The Pelicans have one more win than the Jazz, two less losses. The Nuggets have a firm two-game lead over the Jazz. They're at 30-26. Once you get past Denver, there's a logjam of the Western Conference. Okay, Golden State is at 43-13. Houston's at 42-13. Your number one and number two seeds are decided right now. San Antonio is at three, but they're really, really close to Minnesota. In fact, there's a one-game differential between San Antonio and Minnesota for the three seed. Oklahoma City is three games back of them. Portland is one back of OKC. Denver is one game back of Portland. New Orleans is one game back of Denver. Can the Jazz climb as high as number six? Absolutely they can. There's no question about it. And you take a look at the schedule for the Jazz, which is up and coming. They get the Spurs tonight at home. I like the Jazz to win tonight. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. They should win.
They should win. They're at home against San Antonio. I think they win tonight. And that individual game would go a long ways into to getting the Jazz to where they need to be. They would climb the 500 barrier. Take a look at some of the other games they have. They still have to play Phoenix this week. It should be a win.
18-39, five-game losing streak so far. They should win that game.
That's at home. They get Portland at home. Very winnable game.
Just beat Blazers. Yeah, you should win that.
And they get Dallas at home.
That Dallas stinks.
Look, there's your three games right there. This winning streak, and if they get past San Antonio tonight, which is not a gimme, but this winning streak could grow to 13 games. And that's all it takes to climb into the top eight. Now, after that, things get a little dicey. They get Houston, they get Minnesota. That's tough. But tonight actually begins a six-game homestand for the Jazz, who have played extraordinarily better at home than they have on the road. That's why I think now is the time for this team to make their run. And I think within the next 2 weeks, we will know if the Jazz are going to get into the playoffs. At the end of February, we'll know if they're going to get into the playoffs. This is a crucial, crucial stretch in which they have to go 5-1. And I think if they go 5-1, look, they're there. And I see no reason why they couldn't go 5-1. Houston and San Antonio, you book in with two very good teams. But in the middle, Phoenix, Portland, Dallas, they should win all three of those games. They're right there.
Yeah, I still don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but they can prove me wrong this coming week. So we'll see what happens. We got the All-Star break coming up. So we'll see at the end of February, like you said, where this team's at.
Okay, through the first 3 weeks of March, the toughest opponent for the Jazz through 3 weeks in March is... Are you looking at their schedule right now? Do you have their schedule brought up?
I don't.
Okay, the toughest opponent that they play in the first 3 weeks of March, and this accounts for a lot, would be the San Antonio Spurs on the road. It's the toughest game that they have throughout the first 3 weeks of March. Road games, Sacramento, Indiana, Memphis, New Orleans, Dallas. Now, the end of March is a little steep because you get Golden State and Boston, but they don't play anyone throughout the month of March. They have a very easy schedule coming up over the next 3.5 weeks.
They have a chance to...
Am I making you a believer?
No, not yet, but you can. You got another week or so to make me a believer.
And then they close out with two games against the Lakers. They get a game against the Clippers, a game against Portland. Last game of the year against Portland could end up being a huge game.
That could be seeding.
Could be. Could absolutely be. I'm telling you, I'm on the bandwagon. The Jazz are going to the postseason. We can sit here and break down the X's and O's all we want. To me, it was simple. Went on the road, this team gets in.
Yeah.
To me, it was that simple throughout the entire year. Losing games on the road that they should not have lost.
I've just seen this team down the stretch the last few years falter, and I'm not a believer yet until they can prove me wrong otherwise.
They got the rookie of the year.
Yes, he is.
Okay. They got the best defensive shot adjuster in the game.
Quinn Snyder probably should be coach of the year.
Derek Favors is playing great basketball right now. They added perimeter defense in Jay Crowder. And I think they got away from a somewhat, I'm not going to say toxic, I think that's a little harsh, but Rodney Hood was not happy. And Joe Johnson was not happy. He didn't want to be in Utah either. So it was addition by subtraction. And you brought in Jay Crowder, who's going to assume a starting role within the next couple of weeks. I think they're in. I really do. Something to monitor. Fun contest tonight. The Jazz take on the Spurs. 7 o'clock start time right here on KOL. We got a break for just a moment. We'll come back, put the final touches on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports here on KOL, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. I want to end with this. Since we only have a couple of minutes left, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this. And I actually feel dirty talking about it. Mayweather-McGregor Part 2. Starting to pick up a lot of steam. Does it happen?
I say no.
Why?
I just don't think Mayweather's dumb enough to step in the octagon and take a beating.
Well, yeah, let me take this a step back. If you haven't followed it, over the last 3 weeks, Floyd Mayweather continues to post videos and pictures of himself in the cage, in the octagon. Okay, he's done boxing. He said he's done boxing. But he continues to film himself running around the octagon, enters the, entering a cage. Then he posted a picture over the weekend of him wearing MMA gloves, hitting McGregor with an elbow. McGregor responded, and now the two are going back and forth. And it's picked up so much steam, in fact, that Vegas has already released the odds on if this was to happen in the cage. And to no surprise, Conor McGregor is the overwhelming favorite. Why? Because Floyd's not an MMA fighter. It's the same thing I said when we were talking about these two getting in the ring. Floyd would annihilate Conor because Conor's not a boxer. Conor would annihilate Floyd because, well, for one, he's a much bigger man, and we saw that in the boxing ring. It just seems ludicrous that Floyd would even consider this. He's actually taken some big steps in harassing Conor McGregor if this is not at all likely or a possibility. Dana White commented on this over the weekend as well and said that Floyd actually agreed beforehand to fight Conor McGregor in the cage. He said he actually agreed to that. And I remember one of the press conferences, Floyd said, "I'll fight you anywhere, in the ring or in the cage." Don't get in the cage with Conor, Floyd. Don't
do it.
But they continue to tease one another with it. I think it happens. I really do.
I don't, but I've seen crazier things happen, so we'll see.
If there is money to be made, and trust me, there is, these two will in fact get in the cage. I don't see Conor McGregor fighting in the UFC anytime soon. I don't see that happening because he made so much money in the Mayweather fight. What is the incentive? What's the motivation to get your head knocked off in the cage or take punishment when you are a 100 millionaire?
Yeah, there's...
Right? There's no incentive to it.
No, it doesn't make sense for him.
There's no risk in Conor stepping into the cage with Floyd. None.
No.
Because he would annihilate Floyd Mayweather in the cage. Floyd does... You know, the conversation with boxing was, well, you know, maybe McGregor gets lucky and lands that punch. No, there was never that option. Okay, so for any Floyd fan, and listen, I'm the biggest Floyd apologist you will meet. If anyone tells me, well, Floyd has that puncher's chance. No, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't.
I think he loses in like 30 seconds in round one.
It would be quick.
Yeah,
it would be quick.
It's a quick one for Floyd.
He's such a smaller man to begin with.
I think he's just toying with him, just riling him up on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever it is.
Is it something that, I think that these two are friends. I've thought that for quite some time. And maybe this is helping publicity for both fighters. I don't know. Is it a marketing play? I don't know. Would you pay to see it? Would you pay money to watch Floyd McGregor in the cage?
I will come to your house and watch it.
What makes you think I'm going to buy it?
We'll find somebody else to buy it because I'm not paying money for it.
What makes you you'll come to my house?
I thought being a Floyd guy that you would buy it.
I don't want to watch that.
We're going to have a little get together at your house.
That's annihilation. I don't want to watch that.
I will find somebody dumb enough to buy that fight and I will go to their house.
This fight will sell more than the Floyd McGregor boxing match.
Yes,
you know
why?
Because people hate Floyd so bad and they know it's a guaranteed L for Floyd. They will pay to see it. It will sell more than the boxing fight, guaranteed.
And they're just chomping at the bits to see Floyd lose. So yeah, I'm not buying it and you're not buying it, but somebody will and I'll go over there and watch it.
I talked to Larry Pepe, our MMA insider, and hopefully we can get Larry on the show again relatively soon. I asked him last night, is this really going to happen? Want me to read you the text?
Read it.
I'm going to find the text. Larry Pepe, who, again, a pro MMA radio, I said, there is no way this fight happens, right? He said, quote, never. Floyd is too smart and would never want to go out like that after the career he's had.
There you go. Nothing to worry about.
Out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We'll be back tomorrow to do it again. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We're out.